Hello, DS106 Radio. This is Jim Groom. And in a second or two, I'm going to have Taylor join me. I'm going to talk about some of the work we've been doing with AzuraCast and Reclaimed Cloud, and then the upgrade for the mighty DS106 Radio, which hasn't been upgraded for several years. Well, at least two when we moved it over to the cloud. So we'll see. That should be fun. Anyway, but first, some music, right? Why not? A little bit of music gets you guys and gals and uzzers and uzzers running and gunning on DS. I'm going to play my what are they worth? I don't know. Half hours on Earth. What are they worth? I don't know. DS106 Radio. We're gonna push this out. Push it out, man. Hey, man, you need to push it out. Well, then we will. Trains Across the Sea, Silver Jews on DS106 Radio.
Troubles, no troubles on the line. And I can't stand to see you. I can't stand to see you when you're crying at home. Scotch and penicillin, please try Carlton. A cold black maple hanger and husband's on the run. I just got back from a dream attack that took me by surprise. And in there I met a lady, her name was Shady Sides, and she said, something so old be so wrong. Sin and gravity drag me down to sleep to dream of trains across the sea. Trains across the sea. On Earth, what are they worth? I don't know. In 27 years, I've drunk 50,000 beers, and they just wash against me like the sea into a pier.
Was easy enough. I think Taylor just came on the call. Talk about timing. We're even a couple minutes early. Taylor, can you hear me? But I can't hear you. How about that? Let me figure that out. Hold on one second. I think I know what's going on. OBS audio. See, it's not even time yet. So I think I can bring you in here. Taylor, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, and I can hear you, and so can the radio. Just to be clear, cool. You are on the radio.
Sweet.
How's it feel?
It feels good. Feels good. I was when I was working on AzuraCast stuff yesterday, I was listening to DS106 radio while working on DS106 radio, and it was, I mean, on a different site, right? But it was cool.
Let's do a little recap for the folks who are at home, which is zero people. It's just you and me. But anyway, let's do a recap for just you and me. On, is it Wednesday now?
That we were originally trying to make the upgrade?
It was Tuesday.
Yeah, pretty
okay,
sure.
Okay, so Tuesday or Wednesday? You're right, it was Tuesday. Because
yesterday is Thursday, and there was definitely a day between.
Okay, so Tuesday, February 15th, I said to Taylor, hey, do you want to sit in while I quickly upgrade DS106 radio? And Taylor and Pilot both said, yeah, that'd be awesome. I went into Reclaim Cloud. I got to SSH, and we're coming to just about the end of my successes. I logged into SSH. I ran two commands I found in the AzuraCast documentation that said this should be a pretty easy process. I ran them, and DS106 radio went down, and we spent the next hour, maybe, hour and a half?
Oh, I think it was longer than that. Maybe it was an hour and a half. Yeah, that sounds about right, actually.
Yeah. So we
took it was most of the morning. We worked on it through, like, noon Eastern, 1 Eastern, maybe.
It was good, though, because
noon, probably.
We'll talk about the specter of trouble looming around 11:30 Eastern time.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Yeah, there it couldn't have been that late. Yeah.
We started about 9 or 10, and then by 11:30 Eastern, we were hearing rumblings from the West Coast that they were going to be using the radio, and we'll talk about that in a second. But one of the things that was super
barely awake at that point, right?
Exactly. And it was for a conference. So it was like officially written into a conference.
The morning show.
Yeah, exactly. It was like the Royal Roads morning show for a particular conference. I don't know which is always awesome. And Grant Potter was like, hey, man, guess what? Going to need that radio, man. So anyway, we did take a full backup, cloned in Reclaim Cloud, which saved our ass. Mm-hmm. Backups for the win.
I think maybe to me as important as the backup, right, is how you restore the backup, right? A backup with no restore path is not a backup. and the fact that when we were like, all right, this isn't going to work in time, you know, just had us swap the IPs really quick for an instant restore was really awesome.
Somehow I have figured out this trick, and I don't know if I can always reproduce it, but if you delete an IP, so we went ahead and we deleted the actual DS106 radio station IP.
Well, we had two environments. We had the real one and the backup. And then you delete,
And the backup had a new IP, obviously. And we knew that in order to get the station online in time for the folks in Canada to put 110 people on the radio, which was nuts. But we had to make sure there was no DNS issues, right? That's what we were working through. Mm-hmm. And I was like, let's take a chance. Delete the IP on the original environment, so DS106 radio that had been running for 2 years, and then quickly add delete the one on the other environment and add a new one, and instantly the old IP on DS106 radio came onto the clone, and it was like nothing ever happened. It was beautiful.
Yeah. Lucky. That was really cool.
That was cool. So where did we run into problems along the way?
Yeah, there was a couple things. Hold on, let me pull up my notes. Yeah. I did some more work on AzuraCast stuff yesterday, and I took really, really detailed notes to the point where I was like typing commands into my notes application and pasting them into the terminal instead of the other way around, because I really wanted to make sure I had that just helps it helps me do things more efficiently if I can convince myself that that will be more efficient. Usually I can't.
Exactly.
We ran into issues with two things mainly. So newer versions of, I should even back up further. So AzuraCast is a lot of things, actually. It's a wrapper around a lot of other open source tools, and then it is itself a pretty significant and impressive open source tool. So AzuraCast is Icecast, which is a streaming radio server, and Liquid Soap, which is a sort of like queue manager for it. So basically Liquid Soap can say, hey, tell Icecast to play this, and then when someone goes live, switch over to this. And that is, it sounds like that should be simple. It is extremely not. I will say, as someone who tried to just run a Icecast server like a couple of years ago, I just installed Icecast on a Ubuntu VM on DigitalOcean. It doesn't do what you want it to do. It doesn't do almost anything by default, actually. So it's those two tools. It's a database to manage settings and things. It's storage to manage if you wanted to upload recordings or make recordings yourself. And then AzuraCast itself is a sort of web interface that wraps all of those together. So it's a lot of different things. Because of that, because AzuraCast manages all those different things, it's actually not a single Docker container. It's like four or five Docker containers.
Exactly.
So to make that easy, and so that someone who's setting up a new station doesn't have to immediately be a Docker expert, they have this handy little script that they call docker.sh that will install and properly configure the right config files for a Docker Compose stack, basically. So in fact, it will even install that for you if you don't have that. So basically, on like Reclaim Cloud, the way we deploy it is we deploy a container that already has Docker installed just so that we don't have to deal with that step. And then we run their script, and it goes, great, I see you already have Docker installed, so I will just put the config files in the right places for you and then spin up the stations and the containers within. What we ran into is the newest version of AzuraCast uses a new standard, uses like the latest standard of Docker Compose. So it updates your config files to use that, and our version of Docker Compose that we had installed in that container was not new, not the latest version, so we had to first install Docker Compose. But of course, it did take us like, I don't know, probably an hour and a half to come to that conclusion, because it was sort of unclear what the problem was. So that was the first thing. And then the other thing that I actually still don't have a totally correct answer to yet, but I'm taking my time on fixing because I'm hoping I can learn something from it, and so far I've learned a lot, is basically when we did get that working, the actual upgrade process that script handles is not cleanly doing it. There's some, basically it looks to me like it's actually spinning up multiple copies of one of the database servers. So that's been a problem. And so the web UI doesn't know how to connect. And that's essentially a guess for me at this point, because I'm still learning about it.
But is that because we're jumping versions or no?
I think we've jumped so many versions, and the AzuraCast project moves at such a fast pace, especially because I think it's relatively new, that they probably just did not account for the jump we just made. But again, that's a guess from me at this point. So there's kind of two. So that's what we ran into, basically. And so we reverted the change to DS-106 by, you know, putting our radio, by putting our Jim's backup back in place, and that was all good. And then yesterday, I spent pretty much all morning doing two things. First, updating our Azurecast install to work properly. We have a marketplace installer on Reclaim Cloud for Azurecast, and that Docker Compose not being the right version was causing an issue. So
I updated that. That was a big win. A big win. It's back up and running.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, I'd never worked with any of our marketplace installers before at Reclaim, so that was really awesome to learn about that, and frankly, significantly simpler than I thought. I'm not very well versed in a lot of this stuff, but I am pretty comfortable with the terminal and with bash scripting from my like IT background, and so because I was comfortable with that, updating that installer was not too difficult.
Did you see, I'm going to ask you, and I'm sorry to interrupt your beautiful radio flow, but this is DS-106 radio, so there's no flow allowed.
Yeah.
We kill all the flow. And we just also, we take attendance too. So right now we know that Lauren Haywood is listening. So Lauren, thanks for listening. Big fan. Sign up now and you too could win a free year of hosting on Reclaim Hosting. We're now an official sponsor, given we're running this damn radio. But did you see, I've been following Downs is playing with Grasshopper. And one of the things he did is he went, I mean, I think we've been having this almost indirect back and forth around installing apps and how to figure that out. And he got to the point where you can actually install Grasshopper from a container. You need a separate database server or container, basically. But the idea is you could create a stack and do it. And what I saw it when I was looking at it is I was like, Steven, you might be pretty close to thinking about a one-click installer.
Yeah. So is his, you said separate database server. What do you mean? In a different environment or someplace not on Reclaim Cloud?
No. In Reclaim Cloud, in the same environment.
Okay. So it's like a stack, kind of like exactly. The Ghost installer works, where it's here's the application server, here's a database server.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I still have some things to learn about, particularly the JPS. So it's Gelastic Packaging. I don't remember what the S is.
Yeah, S is, system, but whatever. Syntax something.
Yeah, but they call it cloud scripting. It's probably Gelastic Packaging Script or something like that. But anyway, it doesn't actually matter. I have some things to learn about that, because what the Azurecast installer really is it says, hey, put that Docker engine container that Gelastic has built in, put that on a server and run these commands. That's effectively all that installer is. And the run these commands part, I am pretty comfortable with. What I will have to learn about is
standard.
Okay, standard. All right. What I'll have to learn about is, okay, give me a stack of say MariaDB, and I think Grasshopper is Perl stuff, probably.
It is Perl, which is fascinating.
And I don't know anything about Perl, but but Perl's cool. I just haven't worked with it. Well, I haven't worked with most of these things. So give me a Perl application server, probably Apache, and I'm saying this having not looked at Grasshopper, so I don't really know what I'm talking about. But and a database server, and the main thing is connecting them and setting up the database. That stuff I haven't dealt with in a one-click installer yet. But if I can look at Gelastic's like Ghost installer, which is pretty similar, just Node instead of Apache and Perl, I think that's probably very doable. And the cool thing about that is I find those one-click installers almost as approachable or maybe more approachable than actually spinning up like your own Docker containers. And like, I don't know if you've ever looked into that, but it's not that bad. It's just, you do need to, like, I haven't spent the time to really get comfortable with it. I've read a couple, like, here's how you do your first one. And, you know, you start from somebody else's container that maybe has like Ubuntu or Alpine Linux or CentOS or whatever. And you make your changes and then you commit the changes to the container. And that's fine. It's not something I've dealt with yet. So I'm impressed at Gelastics, which is the software that runs Reclaim Cloud, at their cloud scripting stuff. It seems approachable to me as someone who's bad at programming. So, well, and doesn't have background in it either, really, other than just what I've had to learn.
That's crucial, because Tim did a lot of great work of like documenting some of that and then figuring out some of them. And then we have templates to go on.
Exactly. But
one of the things that you pointed out, which kind of started us a little bit down this road, was the AzureCast one-click installer on Reclaim Cloud was broken. And there may be others. Like, we found that was the case. Like, Mattermost was doing outdated ones. And I think having this time and spending this time on AzureCast, apart from the playful part of DS106 Radio, which is great, is also we need to be in a place where we can make sure, A, those installers are working, or B, we can substitute, for example, the Ghost installer. Maybe it is better to just run it off Docker, the official Docker instance, and we submit a change, or we have one that supersedes Gelastics. Like, I do think getting out and ahead of that, because one of the things we talked about, we talked with Shannon from UMW, just me and Lauren had a chat with all of UMW yesterday, and one of the things that came up that I think was really, apart from the fact that your work, Lauren Haywood, if you're still listening, with Coventry Domains, what you and Noah did to kind of integrate that is becoming a subtle sensation. So apart from that, Shannon's interested in that for sure. Also, the idea of people want to understand the value of the cloud, but they want examples. Like, edtechs don't want, a lot of them, especially now, don't want the tabula rasa where they dream it up. They want, just like anyone, they want 4, 5, 6 really good examples where they can go to a faculty and say, hey, I saw someone doing this at this school. That might be of interest. So,
well, and I think they need the examples so that they can dream the next thing up, right? Yeah. That's how this starts, you know? That's at least, that's how it often works for me, is like, I am pretty comfortable with this type of tech, or I'm getting there, but like, that's because I've spent a lot of time looking at the examples, and I have the, you know, the ability to pick brains of people at Reclaim on some of this stuff, so it's a little bit easier for me to do. But I think that's exactly the thing, is the use case, there has to be enough use cases out there to inspire other use cases for folks.
Yeah, I think that's, and look, it's even true with, like, you know, what Coventry did, Oklahoma did with the integration of WordPress multi-site and domain of one's own. It seems logical in retrospect. Mm-hmm. And even at UMW, when we had both, you know, we were always like, the two aren't competing. But that integration visually and that example does all the speaking you can theoretically, or blog posts, or arguing. Like, it's always, the proof is in the pudding, right? Like, you got to do the work and then demonstrate it and then go and do more and do more. So it's cool to see that. So, let me ask you this, or was there something you were going to say and I interrupted you?
No, I don't think so. I was going to say that we left Tuesday with, okay, we need to fix the installer. We need to make a dev site for DS106 Radio so we can try and upgrade there before we do anything to the real one. Obviously, it's not going to be two commands because something's going on with the upgrade. So Thursday morning, I fixed the installer, and I learned a ton in the process of doing that. So that was great. In fact, now when you install AzureCast on Reclaim Cloud, you got an email before saying, here's your URL to to visit. And now I put an additional line in there that says, here's your URL. And then after that, here's a link to our support documentation on Azuracast. And it links to the section on how do you map a domain or how do you get broadcasting working if you don't want to map a domain. And so I updated the documentation to do that. And I did that right away because I knew if I didn't do it immediately, I never would.
Also, the idea of textual documentation like that is awesome. It's something we had talked about, like documentation you need in the act that points you to solving an issue, or even the way in which you dreamed of the idea of you should have an Azuracast that doesn't need a map domain, and here's how you do that. And then one, if you are going to map a domain, and here's how you do that. Like, that's something I just skipped over. And I always default to map domain, which is more expensive and not necessarily better. So I
Azuracast, the expense is not, you know, Azuracast is a pretty heavy application, honestly. It sits at like 14 to 16 cloud, like 13 or 14 cloudlets doing nothing. Well, not doing nothing. The radio station is up, but you know, that's with like only a few people listening. And so that's like, you know, like $30 a month, basically. This is a very, very rough estimate. Actually it might be a little bit less than that, but anyway, so to pay for an IP address for a few dollars, $3, isn't that huge in the cost of it. But you know, like I like to compare these things. Like, for instance, Jitsi, which we're talking together on right now, this instance, that's when right. We did our community chat and had like 30 or 40 people on there, that was 22 cloudlets. Like, that was only a few more cloudlets at its peak of all these people connected to it. And I would imagine it's kind of similar with Azuracast. Like, probably when DS106 Radio had 100 people listening, it probably wasn't a lot more than like, I didn't look, but I would be willing to bet that it wasn't using a ton more than it does at Idle, because
there was no difference in the cost.
Yeah, because effectively all of that is bandwidth, and you're not really paying. You would have to use a ton of bandwidth on Reclaimed Cloud to notice that in a resource kind of way. But the reason Azuracast sits there and uses that many cloudlets is because it has a lot, I mentioned before, it has like five different Docker containers and services running that's orchestrating. And that's a lot of RAM, basically, is what that amounts to. It's sitting there using about a gig and a half of RAM at any given time. So if you were going to run that on, and I know this, if you're gonna, because I've done this, if you're going to run that on DigitalOcean, you need a server with like 3 or 4 gigs of RAM to make that work, and that's like $40 a month. It's not a cheap application to run in the whole scheme of these things, because a lot of them are really cheap to run, is my point. You might be thinking like $40, that's not that bad, and it isn't really for what it does, but it's
it adds up a lot
more than Etherpad, you know.
Yeah. Well, maybe you don't, I don't know. But like, I thought a lot about cost in the cloud, because that's a question we get regularly. I know you got from someone yesterday, and I actually kind of pushed that question to you because I'm interested in it, but also interested in like how we imagine it. And so, for example, it roughly costs us to run DS106 Radio $1.70 a day. So you do that by 30, it's like $30-$40 a month probably. And that's with an IP address, that's with, you know, decent usage. Mm-hmm. But I run DS106, the core site as well, which is a very intensive site, and that costs me $22 a month. And so like, you start seeing, this is a suite of tools for a community. Yeah. And you're maybe talking about $70-$75 a month to run
that. Yeah, probably overestimate, honestly.
Overestimate, exactly.
Yeah, and that's really not expensive. I'm not saying in absolute terms that's expensive, right? More just like comparing, like I guess what I'm saying is I'm setting up in the Zuricast server the first time I did that, and that was not on Reclaim Cloud at the time, I was kind of surprised how much resources it uses. And that's, it's just, it does more than you're thinking about. Web radio is kind of hard because there's not a lot of market forces pushing on open source tools to exist. There's really one radio server. It's called Icecast. That's it. That's the only one. There's Shoutcast, and it hasn't been updated since 2003. I'm joking, but not really. I don't know that number off the top of my head, but it has been a long time. So last time you ran Winamp, that's about the last time Shoutcast was updated. So then that's it. Those are like the two options.
Yeah, it's true. And it's interesting too, because like the other piece here while we're talking about radio, and I think this came up, did this come up in our EdTech meeting? I think it did. We started talking a little bit about TV and like, you know, obviously streaming. And I think another piece to this, because like I'm starting to see as we're doing this stuff and playing with it, and I always think the play has an end game. And the end game for me is having tools that we can roll out and do cool, fun stuff with. So for, like when Shannon says that, I'm always like, yeah, and I think that's what we're kind of doing. Like we're using Jitsi to have this conversation. It's streaming out over Zuricast, which is DS106 radio, right? Like we're talking about PeerTube, which is a place where we could actually, you know, stream seamlessly and then highlight videos and then also maybe pull on the API and create kind of like an ongoing, what was always the dream was DS106 TV, right? A kind of integrated space. And I'm digging it. Like I'm digging the kind of vertical and horizontal that always was the inspiration of DS106 to play with these tools. But in a community, and like you've really done this immediately when you came to Reclaim, is like, let's forgo the bullshit tools like Zoom and all the other stuff that we know, like everyone uses them, like it's time to make the donuts. Let's not. Let's find alternatives. I just kind of feel
like if anyone's going to do that, it has to be us, right?
Exactly.
Like if you're looking at these tools and you're an ed tech at an institution, and you're like, well, Reclaim pays for Zoom. And they run their own infrastructure.
Yeah, that's right.
And not that I'm saying there isn't a place. We've talked about this a lot, right? There are a place for these tools. The proprietary ones I'm saying as well. Like there are reasons. I understand the reasons. I've worked in institutional IT most of my somewhat short career so far. But, you know, like I get it. But I do think that the way I phrase that, there is a place for them. I obviously mean that there's also a place for the flip side of that too.
Yeah.
I think we can demonstrate that here, because why would anyone else demonstrate it before we would? You know?
I really do like being back in that space, frankly. Like being able to do it, and the fact that we even talked about it at our recent EdTech meeting about the idea of, you know, what would a professional development community space framed around, you know, streaming and TV and sharing, that really gets me excited. Like,
yeah,
like few things I've, do, you know,
we've played, you've got PeerTube. I have an Owncast install that I've messed around with a little bit, but having a PeerTube that we could all stream to from Reclaim would be really cool. And yeah, having I don't know that PeerTube does this out of the box, but like obviously PeerTube does, you know, video on demand stuff. Like you can upload videos there as well. But having a actual like Reclaim 24/7 channel where you click on it and it just queues up videos, and then when someone streams it butts into that, I think is kind of a cool idea. And I could see obviously we'd learn a lot from doing that, which is probably the most important part of it. But I could honestly see some interesting and pretty direct example for maybe a larger institution that wants to do like a MOOC type thing. Like what if you uploaded content for a MOOC and you know, you just had that going all day. I'm not really even at the point where I'm talking, arguing pedagogically for this. I'm just trying to think of, like, what would that mean for building a community around something?
You know? Exactly. Like, my thinking, and I've looked at this, and so once we get DS-106 squared away and AzuraCast all set, maybe we should revisit PeerTube. Because my thinking with PeerTube, we have the domain reclaim.tv. Lauren Hanks and I went on a shopping spree for some top-level domains, and Reclaim TV is one of them, which I think is a brilliant top-level domain.
Yeah, but yeah, hang on to that one.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I thought of when I thought about PeerTube is, like, think about it. All of these schools now are doing a ton with video. They have it on sites like Panopto, you know, Kaltura, all these weird names like Kaltura, Panopto, like, they all are what they say they are. But, like, and that's great, like, whatever. But, like,
they all sound vaguely Mediterranean.
Fascist. I was like, where are these, like, if you go to a school's site, maybe their YouTube space. Mm-hmm. So that's one. But the problem there is copyright. YouTube has become a copyright warehousing site. That's all it is. PeerTube lets us get entirely outside that, which is beautiful.
Yeah. It's such a problem in education, because so many of that has fair use that you just don't really, you don't have the opportunity to even play that game on YouTube. And honestly, YouTube, as far as, like, the big platforms go, is honestly handles it better than the others, and they don't handle it particularly well.
Yeah.
But, like, if you've looked into, like, Twitch and stuff right now, like, they're doing the same content ID matching stuff, but then it's like two strikes and you don't get a channel anymore.
Exactly.
Whereas YouTube, usually it'll just be like, all right, we're going to give that money to the copyright owner, and maybe we'll mute the track or something. Like,
well, I got deleted from YouTube
elsewhere, which is amazing.
In 2012, I got deleted from YouTube because of my copyright habits. But I like was doing it as a demonstration. Like, I do this for education. I make no money off my channel. Like, some of these videos have millions of hits that were like Jason. It was like literally like, you know, Halloween Atari 2600, me talking about the graphics and like the idea of this. It went viral. Like, a lot of people liked it in terms of just watching this gameplay of an Atari 2600 Halloween game that was banned. And, you know, it was like a niche thing, but I didn't make any money off it. But people made all these copyright claims, and then it was taken down. My point is, with PeerTube, right, you can create a kind of, you know, let's face it, you can create a community at a university where people are uploading content that may be a part of a class discussion, may be part of a lecture. These things happen on these campuses. They're putting it out to YouTube, but they're checking themselves because they're afraid. And then some classes maybe should be shared, or even if they're shared, you can do single sign-on, and some are private, some are not. But just think about the rich content that these universities take ownership back of, right? Like, at a scale that's hundreds or thousands of videos, and then not, you know, using YouTube, which is kind of like Instagram. It's like, here's our advertising channel. It's like, that's fine, but your advertising is in the material that your awesome folks are creating intellectually. It's not about how freaking beautiful your campus is, as much as that's great, you know? Mm. So I think there is something there. It has all the elements to not only do that, but federate. So you can federate between schools, share content. Like, you could do amazing stuff with PeerTube. I'm convinced it's one of those breakthrough apps, particularly given that a lot of it is video driven. You know what I mean? And so much of our culture.
The installer's already there. I know it works. I spun one up 2 days ago.
Yes.
So it's not too hard to get set up with, on Reclaim Cloud at least. One thing that I really need to learn more about, like, I understand the concept of federation and sharing content between instances. Like, I understand conceptually why that's cool, why what people would want it, But I'm really interested in a little bit more of the technical of what the hell that actually means in terms of infrastructure. Like, what is happening there? I do know that in PeerTube specifically, they also, on top of the Federation story, there's also the whole client peer, like, hey, if you're watching this, you may also be uploading it to someone else who's watching it, just to make sure that, because video on the internet is hard. It turns out, like, you know, if anyone, you know, I know, I'm sure you remember, I remember, like, video before YouTube kind of sucked on the internet. Like, it would, you'd hit a player and then you'd wait 15 seconds and then be like, all right, is it ever going to work? Yeah. And usually the answer was no, and you had to refresh it another time. Like,
yeah, I'll downline that for later.
That's all because of things like, you know, CDNs and caching and stuff. All this stuff wasn't there yet, because when you play a video on YouTube, you're getting the where that file is located is probably one of the hardest questions to answer on the internet. Like, if you wanted to track that down, because it depends on the video and how popular it is and all this stuff. It may be, if it's a very popular video, that video that you're watching on YouTube could be coming from literally a data center down the road and not from, you know, California, Google's headquarters or whatever. Like,
most likely that is, right?
What'd you say?
It most likely is the way they're working, right?
Yeah, well, because they have data centers everywhere, but they also, more importantly, you know, lease space in data centers in even your ISP. Like, for instance, like my last job at St. Norbert, we were on a network called WiskNet, and it was for schools in Wisconsin. And WiskNet has data centers where they have where Google is paying to put, you know, YouTube in their data center so that it streams better to WiskNet customers. That's just schools, right? Like, that's just schools. You can't buy WiskNet internet if you're an individual, you know? So that's my point, is like, it is in more places than you imagine, that more places than seems possible in a strange way.
No.
And so PeerTube is solving that a different way and saying, okay, you know, you, Jim, aren't going to have Bava TV on every, you know, in every state in America and every country in the world.
Damn it.
You know, but we can put it in a, you know, one place and then have the ability for people to, you know, people who are watching also help that caching situation.
Exactly.
There's also the fact that, like, you know, our cloud infrastructure is better than it was, you know, 15 years ago too. And so the fact that yours is located in the UK, I can stream it just fine because the bandwidth isn't super.
Are you saying to me, just to be clear, that a piece of me will be on everybody's computer?
Everybody who's watching.
That's right? A reason, like,
it's interesting because even PeerTube is a little bit of the tech that, like, torrenting,
yes,
you know, invented. That's a little bit of that concept in there. And they even say, like, when you watch a video on a PeerTube instance, it'll even be like, hey, just so you know, like, the nature of this tech, if you're uploading video to another person because you're seeding it out as a watch viewer, your IP address may be shared. That's just kind of how that
works. Funny you should say that, because my son is like, A, because he streams on Twitch, and he's like, A, your naming of your Bava Wakelys is terrible. You need to name it something. And I don't, well, obviously,
anyone's going to discover it. It's only, they have to go to Bava TV to find it. You know?
Exactly. Like, he doesn't understand
SEO
that.
Here.
But the other thing he said is, it's really creepy that they're taking your IP address. And I'm like, I think it's great that people know when they watch this video what they're getting into, because, you know, Twitch TV and the rest of them are doing the same thing, but it's just all invisible. And I want it to be apparent what you're giving up when you're going into this relationship. And I think
they is the important thing in his sentence. They are taking your IP address. Mm-hmm. Be clear, if you're watching something on Twitch or streaming something on Twitch, Amazon knows your IP address.
Yeah, there you go.
Because they own Twitch. If someone is watching a Bava TV video, they in that situation who may know your IP address is you, because you have access to the back end of PeerTube and you can probably see analytics, maybe. Yeah. I don't actually know.
And but I'm assuming use it against them.
You probably could. And so just you. and if you're doing the whole, like, if multiple people are watching, then the person you're uploading to may. But, you know, IP addresses aren't particularly, they never really have been private. There's reasons that you may want to care about that, for sure. I'm not saying that that's not something you should ever not, that you should ever not care about. But, you know, one of the reasons I think it comes up in the context of Twitch a lot is if you're someone who has a big audience, you know, there's like 2,000 people watching you. Sometimes people will try to find the IP address of that popular person and then, like, DDoS them while they're streaming.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a little bit different situation here.
That hasn't happened to me yet, just to be clear.
No. Yeah. That would be an amazing problem to have. Well, maybe not amazing, but like a crazy problem to have. Like, so many people are watching this that someone made a target while I was streaming. You know, it's just a different, it's important to know why you would care about that and why you wouldn't care about that.
So,
right, like, I really think that's important anyway.
Here's an interesting thing there too that I'm interested in. So, and I don't fully understand it, but I think it harkens back to another era, is the federation. Like, what does that mean with PeerTube? And people have actually DM'd me about PeerTube libraries and other folks who are interested, like, how do we run that? And I'm like, because I'm a fan of it now. But the idea there is that I could have a PeerTube, and then you could create, say, you know, Jaden.tv. And then you could, you know, friend me, or we could make a link. And then you can basically bring in videos of mine into your network. And so I could, once we start Reclaim.tv, share the Reclaim relevant videos. And, like, there's no the metadata is there. It's just pulled over. And I'm not suggesting that everybody at a university needs their own TV station, but sure. It does certainly change the idea of, like, a network of communities and then federated with broader communities, and then going back to BitTorrent, if a lot of people in your community are using this service to share videos. I know Joe, who's listening, hey Joe, and Paul, both of them mentioned the idea of, like, you know, Paul was joking about cost of DS106 radio, but Joe was talking about the idea of, like, I love the idea of a MOOC channel that is controlled and maintained, that you brought up, Taylor, in, you know, a space they own. And that would mean that most of that traffic maybe is even local and optimized as a result of the fact that it's specific to that university, right? I think it would be a good model. I really want to test drive this with a school or with something. I guess Reclaim TV would be a really good example to try. Yeah. And I'm ready.
Yeah. I think the federating thing, I hadn't even thought about that, because I think that solves or could solve a problem that some schools may have, which is that like with YouTube, I mean, in particular, which is sort of like, okay, do we want to have a YouTube channel for the entire institution, and we put all our eggs there so that we can get people watching and engaged because we have to feed the algorithm beast? Or do we do something else, like have each college or school inside the institution have their own thing, and you can't really cross post on YouTube, although you kind of can if you do playlists, and like it has some flexibility but not everything you'd want. And you could theoretically, in a federated situation, really do that however you want. You could have, you know, if you wanted to go insane with it, you could have each faculty member have their own instance. That would be not kind of nonsense, but you could do it.
It would be right nonsense. Now. I'm sorry. It would be nonsense, but I would love that. Andy Rush, when we were, you know, riffing off the Domain of One's Own idea, he was coming up with the idea of the kit, which was a video kit, which we started DS106 TV recordings with. And then Tim took, and he did the, the DTLT Today series, which was like 100 episodes, and we used that kit. But like Andy's idea, and it came to be, is everybody's going to be streaming and managing their own video. Kind of like, and that's like, he was right.
Yeah, and 100%.
In that moment. And yeah. I'm not saying that everyone needs to be a streamer. I'm really not. But I am fascinated in the idea, like Lauren Haywood is saying on Twitter right now, is, you know, there is a place for a media commons in higher ed and for sharing mm-hmm. this work and for giving people that access and kind of cutting out the corporate middlemen that we've kind of depended on to get here. Yeah. And maybe we don't need them in the same way. And maybe it's good if higher ed uses these green space open source. Brian Lamb always talked about these open source applications as green spaces in the ed tech world. And I think there's truth to that. And I mm-hmm. think like we have to keep pushing on that. Like otherwise, like you said, you know, like you pointed that out, like if we're not doing it, who's gonna, you know,
yeah.
and not Reclaim in particular. I'm saying ed tech
yeah.
in general.
In that case, I was kind of talking about, Reclaim specifically, but certainly broader. Yeah, I mean, like, companies exist to make money, right? Like, so like a large corporation exists to make a certain type, let's call it a certain type of money, right? Like a certain scale. It's just, yeah, this is something that could be really big for higher ed, and, you know, or empowering maybe is the right word for higher ed. Lauren mentioned she feels a little jaded about it, and I get that. I don't think the U.S. higher ed market is particularly better positioned to pull this thing off, this dream. I don't really know enough about other higher ed thing around the world to say one versus the other, but I will say it's not like I think the U.S. is better primed for it at this moment, but it is something that I think could be really interesting, like even in some really straightforward practical things, like yeah. these things like Kaltura, like you were mentioning, they're very expensive. They're extremely expensive. You pay for not only running, of course, the application and support, which you do get, but you also pay for storage, of course. And you pay for bandwidth, and you pay it in a bunch of different ways. That's how these things work.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to it, the way that you pay for those things on the cloud is similar in certain ways. Like you're paying for those things that you're not really like if at a certain point you're paying for bandwidth if it was really really popular, but. It's also much more pay as it is used, which I think is good. Like there's so many things in at least in my experience where people go like, this is expensive, but it can be worth it if it gets used.
Yeah.
And then the question is, will it get used? Which of course no one can answer, beforehand, you know?
But I like the idea.
What is the advantage of some of this stuff in cloud and with containers and scaling in particular, where it's like, okay, if it's not used, you're paying $30 a month, which
exactly.
isn't really that expensive.
Yeah. It's funny because one of the models that comes, you know, that we've been tagged with at Reclaim by various vendors we deal with, but even other ed tech vendors, and I understand it's hard to come up with a model. Like, I'm not talking shit, but like, at the end of the day, like, when you start doing licenses and then you're like, here's the cost of the license and it's up to X amount thousand or whatever. It's like, you're already saying, I'm going to take this much money, whether 5 people or 5,000 people use it. And like, mm-hmm. it really starts to get tricky for people to budget, you know, because then yeah. what happens when you go beyond that, if it takes off? And I know at UMW where we didn't have a ton of money, it was scary. My other point I wanted to make, going back to like the utopia of higher ed, whether in America or the UK, is my opinion is I felt like I was part of a community at UMW and then Reclaim and whatever, or DS106, let's just say. And it was never institutionally specific. And this is to your point, Joe, too. It was always a kind of marginal cult-like group. Maybe cult is wrong word, or just like alternative group that were playing with this stuff and I think doing good stuff. But the mainstream, whatever that is going to go the way it goes. And I have no interest really in trying to control or manage that. I think when I got all excited about syndication and how it was going to go and realized it was going to die, you know, sometime after, you know, Google Reader went down, it didn't stop me from what I'm doing. Like, I think that's the thing. It's like, these things will go in and out of fashion and people will use, we talked about it, applications like Zoom, which suck. But
But even syndication, right? Like, we call that federation now. It's the same freaking thing. It's the same thing. And I read a blog post about RSS yesterday, right? So, like, you know,
like Pilot
is exploring it. And that's awesome because I've been using, I used Google Reader was my first RSS client, you know, I've been using RSS since then, and I don't think it is. I think that what people who say it's dying are people who need advertising analytics, and RSS doesn't mess with that. So I think it's hard to say, but I will say there's certainly more good RSS clients out there now than there were. But you know what? I think there's kind of the PeerTube thing. There's one linchpin that I'm interested in after that, which is the actual creation of the content. You know, you and I do a lot of stuff with OBS, and OBS is amazing. It is not accessible at all to someone who's new to it. You know, if you really want to learn it, that's awesome. There aren't a lot of tools out there for people who don't want to learn OBS. That's what Zoom, I think, is good at, right? Zoom does the video mixing for you, or other video platforms, right? Google Meet, whatever, whereby, you know, they do the, you might not think of it that way if you haven't done this a lot, but when you're on a video call and you share your screen, we use a little share screen button, that's video mixing. That's what OBS does, right? And what I really want is a tool that can provide that level of functionality to connect to a PeerTube, you know, and maybe that's
a Jitsi
install that can stream there,
exactly,
or something. That to me, the first thing is a Jitsi install, because when lockdown pandemic stuff first hit, you know, the way at least at St. Norbert, and I think a lot of other schools did the same thing. We had a lot of people asking, how do I make recordings to send to my students? And, you know, I had like a couple options. It was like, hey, you can use this really nice tool that does a really quick recording. You can use Kaltura, has a built-in recording tool. That was the platform we had.
Yeah.
And finally, you could just fire up a Zoom call and hit record, even if you're the only one. And I would say probably 90% of people went with that option because it was what they know.
Yeah.
They knew.
Always.
Or at least was closest to what they knew.
Yeah, I agree.
By the way, that option will be the lowest quality by far. And you still actually have to do this with it, you know, but it was accessible. And so I'm wondering if there's room for, you know, something like a Jitsi that is like, right now we've been talking about marketplace installers. What if we had a Meta installer that installed PeerTube and Jitsi and had them linked together? I'm not saying that I know how to do this at all, but I'm just saying, like, that would be amazing. A one-click installer for something that is, here's a syndicated video platform that has a easy, a tool bolted onto it that lets you get content in there really easily too.
And I want to applaud you because I mean, we were using Whereby, I think our first community chat, and that wasn't ideal. But when you busted out Jitsi, you upgraded it. And I think there's got to be a hack for Jitsi to allow you to integrate a stream. I really, really liked it. Like, I really liked how Jitsi looked. It did the editing automatically. And so while you saw all the faces, I thought it was just going to be a big Hollywood square on the actual recording, but the recording, whenever anyone talked, that's what came up. And it was like a seamlessly edited discussion. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it looks great. And the audio is even pretty good, which is kind of weird for a video calling platform. Usually the audio gets just crushed to hell. And it kind of does, because it has to make sure you don't hear everyone's cat. But, you know.
But, I mean, I think there's the difference between good enough for a community that wants mm-hmm. the stuff out and accessible, and then those people who are really about production value, they're the ones who will be using OBS, they're the ones who will be using other tools, and that's fine.
Yeah, the two can live and that's side great, by side. Because that's at the point where you want more than you will learn OBS, because it's not that bad if you're interested in learning it, in my opinion.
Agreed.
You know, but if you're not, it's terrible. that's the threshold you have to get over is, hey, is this worth learning for what I want to do? Basically, that's the answer. I even think that there's even a place for something. What's the tool? There's a tool that I also recommended at my last job quite a bit, and I'm kind of a fan of for what it does. But basically, it's just a browser extension that you click record, and it puts your webcam in the page, and you can record, and it'll upload it directly to their servers when you're done. And it's just like the fastest way to make a not very polished video, but at a little bit higher quality than a Zoom recording.
Yeah, I'm with that.
There's a place for an open source version of that too. Maybe that uploads its video to something like Nextcloud or to a PeerTube, you know. That I would love to see too.
Yeah, I do. I dig that. I'm glad. I'm glad this conversation went from DS106 Radio to, you know, a vision of, you know, not only audio, which is highly accessible. And I know Grant Potter always said, like, you know, some of the video stuff is superfluous. Like, just, you save bandwidth, you save overhead, just do some talking. And I do think there's value there. But I do think that we're also driven by video, and we're driven by that idea of seeing and connecting. So I think there's space for both. Most of these talks could also seamlessly just have an audio version, and it could feed right into, like, take that. Like, you could have a feed into a radio running right alongside that TV, right? Like, you don't... You could have other options, you know.
Yeah.
I love the idea of like a media suite through Reclaim Cloud that you could install and run.
Yeah, and maybe a more realistic version of what I was saying before of like a Meta installer is really just like it's three tools and we have really good documentation on how you hook them together and simple to use documentation, you know. You click this, you map a domain. You click this, you map a domain. You click this, you map a domain. You're done. You know, that could be pretty powerful, I think.
And I mean, I am a frustrated TV producer, so all of this is you know, in service to that.
Going the opposite direction from simple to use, I found out, and I haven't played with this yet. Did you know that you can run OBS in Docker?
Oh, I did not.
Sorry for my bell. There's a whole world. There's like a couple containers I found of people who stick OBS in Docker and then they put a VNC client in front of that so that you can, you know, VNC is remote desktop. So you can load a web page and manipulate an OBS client that's running someplace else. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if that makes any sense yet, but
it's almost like
that'd be interesting.
It's almost like playing games off of some of those like servers online, like Paperspace.
The opposite, right? So you would need some way to get your video sources to that, but there are things that do that. You know, you could use something like OBS Ninja, and then run your actual OBS thing that's pulling that all in on Reclaim Cloud. And
why
that
would they do that though? What's the
doesn't
logic?
Have very good bandwidth at home.
Ah, gotcha.
Maybe because right now, like say, right now we're just doing radio, so it's not too bad bandwidth wise. But say your upload bandwidth was terrible, you would be limited by that, you know, by the quality that your home internet can serve up. in the case of your situation, your bandwidth is fine, and this is radio, so it doesn't take a lot of bandwidth anyway. But I could see that being a situation for some people, or maybe you just don't. Maybe you have a Chromebook. You don't have access to Windows or a Mac machine that can run.
Yeah, that is interesting. All right, I have a meeting in 2 minutes, but this was an awesome hour. I have a recording of this. Maybe I'll blog about it. But I like that we captured not only the practical of what you're doing, but also some of the dreaming around the media. And then also, I think we need to revisit the DS-106 radio update, like when we're going to try and upgrade it. So we'll be chatting.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how much time I'll have today, but I am going to try to revisit that soon, because two plans. One plan is I'm trying to fix the actual error message I've narrowed it down to. And I think I will learn a lot by at least trying to fix that. And second plan is as we've mentioned, because we have that second install, I can always just lay down a new AzuraCast install and restore from AzuraCast backups from the live DS-106. I think either of those could work. I'm trying both because I'm hoping to learn something from both. And so far, I've learned a ton about Docker.
That's awesome. Just
trying to troubleshoot
it. No, it's been great watching you do it. And I realized how quickly I hit a wall and how happy I was you were there with me to help me imagine the wall was not simply brick that was impossible to work through. So thank
you. Yeah, when we're working on this stuff, I can't say enough how much I am just speculating as I say we should try this next.
You speculate real good, Taylor. All right. So. Well, I got to jump off this, but it was great talking to you. And DS-106 Radio, what do we say? When we say DS-106 Radio, we say for
life.
Life. Yeah. All right.